A shortcut to heaven. According to Jewish tradition, there are a few ways to ensure you can get into heaven. One's to live a pretty sacred life. You know, do good, don't do evil, perform a lot of mitzvot. Okay, living like that is its own reward, but let's face it, not everyone is up to the task. It takes a major and unerring commitment. Is there some easier way to get into heaven? You know, some way to cut into the line. Over the summer, for instance, I had to go to the DMV and take care of some business there, and I like the office in Beaverton. The lines usually aren't too bad there. And when you go, you take a little number, like in an old New York deli, and it's got your number on it, and then you look at the monitors and you wait for your number to be called. Well, this one day when I arrived, there were lots of people, and I took my number, 239, and looked up at the board, 150. Oi, gewalt, it was gonna be a wait. Then I looked down at the dispenser. Someone had taken a number and then left it there. They must have had some sort of emergency, I don't know, but there it was, number 173 on the counter, looking right up at me. Should I use it or wait? What would you have done? And what would have been the proper thing to do, regardless of what you would have done? So are there ways to jump to the front of the heaven line? Thankfully, there are. Our sages believe that anyone who recited the Ashrei 3 times a day for their entire life, or at least from their bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah onward, would make it into the upper realms. Perhaps the most challenging shortcut, though, is to make 3 shiduchim, 3 matches that result in an enduring beshert, love, and marriage that can make it through the years. And there's a famous midrash that a Roman matron, a matron, asked a rabbi at the time and said, I know your God created the world, but what's God been doing since then? And the rabbi said, God's been busy, you know, pairing off this one with that one and that one with this one. And she looks at the rabbi and says, really? That's the best your God can do? I could do it like that. And that very evening, she lined up 50 of her male slaves and 50 of her female slaves, because in those days, marriages were just between a guy and a gal. And she married them off. 100, just like that, she said, your God is not so impressive. Until 5 a.m. the next morning. There are voices screaming out there, people knocking and yelling and complaining that I will not live another day with this person. Apparently, none of the slaves were particularly happy with the work she had done, and she learned that maybe God wasn't so taking a bit too much time off after all. Maybe you can't just wave your hand and make a happy life. I've always wanted to get my heaven card that way, though. What could be more heartening than to know that you've helped 3 couples find love and go through their lives like that? I think I have 1 match under my belt, but it's not so easy, so I got to leave that way to God. But it made me think, if it is so hard to help someone find their soulmate, and if 3 matches are all you need for the heaven hack, then what about someone who saves 3 marriages, 3 families? Shouldn't that earn you a ticket upstairs? I'm pretty much going to insist on it, because this one I'm good on. It's part of the hidden work of rabbis, and I definitely have more than 3 to my name. There's one I'm particularly proud of that occurred just a couple of years after rabbinical school, and this was my pulpit in New York. And New York, as you probably know, is a bit more religious. And that also means there are many families where the kids have gone their own ways. One becomes more religious, one becomes less. And so a congregant came to me with a problem in his family. He was a well-regarded oncologist and a committed conservative Jew, as were his parents. His brother, however, had gravitated to the religious right and ended up becoming a Haredi or ultra-Orthodox Jew, and actually was so learned he became the head of a local yeshiva. The problem between the brothers began when their father took sick and couldn't give his diabetic wife and their mother her insulin shots. One time, my congregant was with his mother in his brother's house. Her nurse was running late, and she asked her son, the doctor, if he would administer her insulin shot, which he dutifully did. His brother was furious with him. "Why? I know, I see your faces. Why? If you want to understand it, we've got to go to the book of Exodus, chapter 21, verse 15, and there's a verse there which says, Umakeh avivi mo mot yumat, someone who strikes his parent, that one shall surely be put to death. A little harsh, but according to the rabbis, it's not just hitting your parent. You actually have to draw blood from them, cause a flow of blood. And giving his mother her insulin shot was just such a deliberate act. I confess, before this situation came before me, I actually didn't even know that this was how this particular verse was interpreted. But I researched it and I came to understand why his well-intentioned action would be deeply disturbing to his ultra-Orthodox brother. Each brother was honoring his mother in the most sacred way they knew how. And yet those ways completely contradicted one another. So I wrote a teshuva, a legal opinion that found a middle way between each brother's understanding. And I only use ultra-Orthodox legal opinions because I thought that might make more of an impression on the very from brother. It did. And they were able to restore their relationship. So I'd like to think I've saved at least three families over the years. But I can also think of those families where there was nothing they could do to fix their problems and no solution that I could find to help them open their hearts back to one another. There are families who've asked for my involvement, but only on their own terms. In other words, they believe they are in the right and they want me to step in and convince the other family member that they need to change. But that's rarely how families work. In so many cases, it's the family as an entity that needs to make adjustments, not single individuals. In my own extended family, my brother-in-law's brother didn't speak to his father for 30 years, and they lived under the same roof when he was an adult. Painful. How painful. Throughout this holiday, all of our Torah and Haftarah selections are about families of origin, our desires for children, the heartache of children, second wives and half-sons being sent off into the desert with only a small canteen full of water, a son almost sacrificed on an altar. It's not accidental. To be human is to wrestle with the complex dynamics of family life, and these readings remind us we are not alone in our struggles. These holidays force us back to our families. Now, for those of us who are fortunate, we spend these times laughing and celebrating together over shared meals. For others, We are reminded of a familial estrangement that perhaps we can ignore most of the year. A number of us are experiencing Rosh Hashanah for the first time without kids and coming to terms with what it means to have an empty nest. Some of us don't even have a family of our own. And for almost all of us, there is a longing for those whom death has taken from us. As I'll sometimes remind families, you can be right, or you can have a loving family. It's hard to have both of those things. Too many of us would rather harden our hearts. Self-righteousness may feel delicious, but it's definitely not a virtue. In the end, I use number 173 at the DMV. I deliberated on whether it was ethical or not to use the ticket someone else had left unused. I counted 7 DMV employees at the windows. Shouldn't take too much time for the others. And in my heart of hearts, I knew that it would have been an additional measure of piety to wait till number 239. But it also seemed that someone had left that ticket there as a gift. I took the shortcut. When it comes to families, there probably aren't very many shortcuts. We have to work at it. We have to apologize. We have to let bygones be bygones. Not always easy. Our sages talked about different personality types. This one was slow to anger, slow to forgive. The wicked personality, they stated, was the person who was fast to anger and slow to forgive. The most pious, slow to anger, and fast to forgive. If there's a shortcut to the heaven of togetherness, that's got to be the number. Chag Sameach.